Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. I'm your host, Nick Sigelski, joined by my co-host, Jen Allen Knuth. And today we have Shelby Furson, who is a named account manager over at Databricks. And folks, if you are looking to improve how you navigate a technical sale, this was really good. Jen, why should people listen?
Shelby not only gets into how she approaches the external sale with a really highly technical sale and complex purchase, but she also gets into how she navigates the internal team that supports her in this process.
A three, a two, a one. Internally listen to this episode. That didn't make sense, but listen anyway. Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes. Today's deal acceleration cheat code is brought to you by Pipedrive, which is a CRM built by sellers for sellers. The best way to drive your pipeline forward is to every single day pull up a list of all of your open opportunities and look at each opportunity by stage and think, what can I do today that will increase my likelihood of winning this deal? That's how you keep your ops moving forward in between meetings that you have on the calendar. Now, we documented 5 cheat codes that can help you cut your sales cycle in half with Pipedrive. There's a link in the show notes to steal them. Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Super Cadence by Influ2, which helps cut through the noise of oversaturated prospecting channels. If you want to get your prospect's attention, you got to do stuff a robot would never do. One of my favorite plays is getting warm introductions to the accounts that I'm targeting via salespeople who work at that account. Salespeople help salespeople. Another approach could be using Super Cadence to run SDR ads to put a face to the name. Now, we worked with Influ2 to put together a special toolkit on ways to humanize your outreach, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.
Otter AI's Autopilot for Sales gives you the freedom to sell on your discovery calls by taking notes for you. One of the best ways to deepen your discovery is to ask your prospect about the impetus behind their goals. So when a prospect tells me they want to advertise on more sales podcasts, I'll say, well, it's not every day that you wake up and decide you want to sponsor a podcast. What's causing you to even explore this in the first place? Now, we put together the ultimate discovery checklist with our friends at Otter AI, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.
All right, Shelby, welcome to the show. We start every single episode with your top 3 actionable takeaways. So let's get your 3.
Great. So number 1 is find your go team. So within your company, you need a lot more than yourself to get deals done and really get your customer across the finish line with a great customer experience. So who in your extended team will respond to that late night Slack? Make it a point to really develop those relationships, say one person in CS, legal, engineering, product, partner, sales ops, and deal desk.
Beautiful. What's number 2?
I usually find it really awkward to ask about any type of org structure and reporting structure within your prospects' accounts. The easiest way I've found to do this is really ask your contact, who are you a customer of? And who are your customers internally?
Love it. Round us out. What's number 3?
So number 3 is say no more often to prospects. Like when we think in the context of our best relationships, say with really amazing managers, they don't say yes all the time to you. They give you the good with the bad, and they also push you to really think bigger. In the context of customers, what I usually will do is actually just tell them straight up, I don't think right now, based on my experience with working with customers, that we're in a place to get started. And what I've found is that customers will usually respond to that pushback with the actual qualification that you need.
Shelby, I want to ask you, there's a lot of folks right now who are starting at new companies. It's the beginning of the year. And they're listening to you talk about, I got to build my go team. And they're looking in their company Slack and at their company directory, and their heart is pounding. It's palpitating like Armand when he sees a big bowl of guacamole that he wants to scarf down. And they're like, I don't even know where to start. how do I start building relationships? What do I say to people? Aren't these people busy? And what if they're kind of awkward? Because engineers can be that sometimes.
It's so funny. I think, especially as we're in a remote environment, it's crazy how often people will say yes if you ask them to put 15, 30 minutes on their calendar just to get to know them. I think especially as we're talking about getting into the new year, you can also use, like, we're in 2024 and it's one of my resolutions to better know my extended team. Who's going to tell you no? I think for me, how I've always opened it up is I usually pull off stuff on people's LinkedIn profiles. You know, you have the school there, you know, Nick, obviously USC, like fight on. But I think it's interesting to see what people's backgrounds look like. Did you live in London? Oh my God, I'm so interested. I'd love to hear about your experience there. You know, it's just about kind of doing the sales process internally. So like get some practice in. It's the same thing, low stakes. And honestly, if people say no, they're not going to be a part of your go team.
Right.
Are you sending them a Slack? Are you sending them an email? Like, what's your channel? Does it change depending on the person? Get super tactical for us for how you do it.
Yeah, I would say it depends on the person, but I would say definitely Databricks is a Slack-based organization. So I would say whatever communication tool works best within your organization and you feel like are standard, sometimes DealDesk is more email focused than they are Slack. They're like, this is overwhelming, way too many pings. And they're much more email focused. So like, I think it really depends on who you're reaching out to. Engineering, obviously Slack, they hate emails. Like, make sure you kind of change it up based on your persona.
So I'm curious about how you actually run that meeting, because I've been in general networking meetings where we make small talk about, oh, you lived in London, you like coffee, oh, that's a cute picture of a dog behind you. And I walk away being like, I didn't really understand anything about this person's expertise, and I don't even know if I feel like I can call on them. So are you doing anything intentionally from like a business getting to know them perspective in that meeting?
I think yes. So one, I think you need to ask them, like, how can I help you? You have how many salespeople like hounding you? How can I help other salespeople be really good partners to you? And when you say that, you kind of understand what you need to do to get their buy-in. But if you also offer to help kind of trickle down the knowledge that you're gaining from this call, they're going to be like, that was so worth it. And Shelby's helping me out. I want to help her out.
Can you just rattle off quickly the types of people that you're trying to get in touch with? I heard you say DealDesk. I heard you say engineering. Who else are you building on your go team?
It's legal, absolutely legal. Product, as well as customer success, partners to get you AWS credits if you need them. And definitely, obviously, your manager, but I would say manager about that and all the way up the chain. They should at least know your name.
Yeah. Can you talk to me about the DealDesk one? Because I presume there's certain information you're looking to get from those folks about where you have flex in your deals.
Yeah, exactly. So if you know and they know that you have exhausted all of the ways, or you approach and come to the call with the three things that you're planning on doing, and I've already checked X, Y, Z, and I want to get your quick take on them, do the research. I already talked with five of my team members about these options. Make sure you're doing three steps until you get to the finish line and then really need their help. Like, you need to make sure that when you go to them, you're really already exhausted the options and you just need their help to pick what it is.
I like that. Now, you mentioned before about not just having a manager relationship, but making sure they at least know your name, the level above your manager and above and beyond. So I think to Nick's point, sometimes it's really tough. You get into these conversations, you're like, what are you into? But we really want to walk out with something. So like, what's one example of something that you're looking to walk out of that conversation, better understanding in addition to them knowing your name?
I think I usually talk about their best experience. Either if you were in my shoes, what advice would you give me? Or what did someone give you when you were in my role? Kind of bring it back so then they feel like you're relatable and bring them back to that role in that position.
I want to move now to, we've built our go team. I've got those people who have my back and I'm starting to have some meetings. And you were talking about how you prepare for the first meeting that you have, typically with a VP of engineering, and you're doing some really intentional things so that you show up with that call with a point of view. Can you talk to us about what happens in your pre-meeting prep?
Yeah, and I think the thing that's great about engineering is they're very direct and honest. When I'm prepping to have that first call, a lot of the research I'm doing is actually off of LinkedIn profiles, as well as off job listings. So a lot of engineering job listings will list the types of tools and technology that someone should be familiar with in order to have that job. And from there, what you're trying to do is put together your own, based on the internet, point of view of that architecture diagram. When you come to the call with that point of view, it's much more about your contacts, a VP of engineering, correcting you what you got wrong, and they appreciate that you put the effort in to build this versus them just rattling off and talking the whole time and telling you everything. I think it really establishes that you have that curiosity and you at least tried. And as a salesperson, I find we're always trying to prove ourselves with these VP of engineering because they're always very skeptical that we're like used car salesmen.
How would you frame that question? So like you find something in a job posting, like I love the way you talk about it where it's like, I'm intentionally looking to be corrected. So how do you say, here's what I found? Like, how does that come out naturally?
And I think this comes back to kind of embracing the fact that you are a salesperson at the end. Like you're allowed to walk into the calls with these VP of engineering and not have it perfect. Like that's where you're able to kind of have the grace. And so I usually just say, my knowledge and my technical expertise can only go so far. So please feel free to correct me if I have anything wrong, but I've tried my best to really piece this together as best as I can.
So folks, one piece of context for you all is a big piece of what Shelby sells is dependent and like integrated into the technology architecture that your customers, your prospects have, Shelby. And so it's really important that you understand their architecture because that's going to impact what you sell, how you sell it, if you can sell, et cetera. And so showing up with your point of view on how their tech stack is built is really important. Are you presenting a diagram? Are you just like rattling off, here's what I know? How early in the call do you do it? I'd love to understand more.
So I usually will focus on three main areas. In building out a data lake, it's fed into a data lake, and then you have to consume it. And what is that data then feeding for the business? So it's really easy to kind of understand at that point, what are the core pieces you need to validate? So from that perspective, coming to the call, and it's an end-to-end diagram, we're talking about a flow. And so I do find that depending on the customer and how much effort you've put into it and there, I guess the level of the company, how rough and ready you can be. But I think both work.
I like that. And I will say, I remember a manager told me, Jen, there's so much gold in job descriptions. They tell you like the relationships between other departments. They tell you the responsibilities, the tool stack, all the stuff. And I still find myself sometimes forgetting to use it as a point of prep. And I love how diligent you are. And then the way you're using both visuals as well as like the spoken word to say like, I can adjust to however someone prefers to learn. I think that's so dang sharp.
And I will add one point to that. So usually within technical selling that we do here at Databricks, a lot of technical architecture diagrams are right there on the internet. If you literally Google company name, technical architecture or technical diagram, you will find something.
What else are you doing that is different in your technical sale than you think folks are probably, like I sell to marketing right now and there's not a lot that I'm doing. Like I'm not sharing, here's your marketing ops tech stack. I mean, I'll talk about some technical stuff, but it's nowhere near the depth of what you're doing. And I'm curious if there's anything that you're like, I know that this is different.
I'm technical. I would say that when we're selling to tech, it's definitely like you need to absorb what we're talking about. You can't just be focused on business outcomes of said technology. The technology internals will make or break how you're able to really qualify and move fast and being able to put together, again, like accurate technical architectures and where to spend your time, to be honest. So you really do need to learn the skills. And not right away. I always tell people, give yourself some grace, be patient, but you need to absorb the technical jargon that is the space I work in.
Take yourself back to like when you were first doing this role. What's one way that you got sharper at the technical piece? Because I will tell you, as someone who's never sold in the technical space, like I would probably be so freaked out to go in and start day one. So what's one tip you would give someone else to make it easier?
Well, I used to sell a financial budgeting and planning application in the cloud, and I didn't even know what the cloud was when I started at Databricks. So I can tell you it's fully possible. But what I did was I had my solution architect on every single intro call, and I listened like a sponge. What were the things that kept coming up on the call? And a lot of these, especially when you're doing sales, a lot of the technologies, you hear them more often. And you're like, what is that? What is that? Where does it go? Let me go review a couple of technical architectures and understand what are the ways that this can be used. How can diagrams differ? Why do they differ? So once you get the understanding of the calls, you can then digest. I always would do a debrief with my SA and be like, why could it be that way? I don't understand. And she would help explain to me why things could be the way they were and why the answers they had. My solution architect, really just stellar, very patient with me.
It's really smart. I mean, that goes back to one, the go team that you talked about. You're building a relationship with this person. And that debrief call is so, so important, where you get off the meeting with the customer and now you have an opportunity to talk to your solutions architect and say, hey, here's the four things I didn't understand, or here's the 40 things I didn't understand if you're me. But you also then can have two-way communication where you can say, hey, when you did this, I actually think you might have thought about framing it up this way. And so you can actually build a really, really great relationship when you do that. One other tip that I have is, I think a lot of salespeople over rotate on consuming sales-related content, meaning they listen to 30 minutes to President's Club. They spend hours on LinkedIn. They've bought 42 different courses, and they never once consume content designed for the people that they sell to. And so if you're listening to this show, I appreciate that. Please don't stop. But you might also consider spending 15 minutes a week consuming a piece of content that's designed for law firm managing partners or VPs of engineering in the healthcare space. And what happens is when you consume what your customers do, you start to become smarter than they do in that space, which is a sort of scary thing.
I think the other thing that I've done in the past is your company is full of email aliases and threads and like that you can get on. One of the things that I've done to always stay up to date on the technical aspects of the company I work at, Databricks, I'm actually on one of the product threads. So I read all of our PRDs. And so what that does is it always is an activity that is related to our product and why we're making decisions the way that we make decisions. And that is basically what I'm selling to. So it's honestly like understanding the dialogue that's happening with engineering decisions that are being made.
That is so good. Getting on the email aliases of engineering, product, et cetera. Because even if you skim, you keep yourself in the know. I really like that. Shelby, you mentioned something in your prep doc and also in an answer a couple of minutes ago where you talked about moving your deals faster. And I'm curious, you've got that first meeting with this VP of engineering, and it sounds like sort of what you're doing there is you're confirming business initiative. You're figuring out, hey, do I have my understanding of the architecture right? And I presume you're doing some selling of, hey, here's who I typically need to meet with, maybe a mutual action plan or preview into what happens next. And we've actually had a couple folks from Databricks on recently who have talked about a lot of those things. I want to home in on the, what are you doing coming out of that meeting, or what are you doing in that meeting to help your deal move faster and not take 7.5 years?
So I think it comes down to really making sure that you keep your scope of what you're trying to accomplish narrow. Because of what we sell today, it's very broad and wide. What I found is that if you don't have a win that is 100% win in any part of the platform, you've lost. You need it to be crystal, crystal clear, the win. So you make sure that wherever you come out of that call, you qualify as a salesperson, but then you focus and you stack rank. Where am I going to 100% win? And you do that one. And then after that, you land the deal, go after the expansion. There's your pipeline for expansion. But you need the win to be 100% crystal clear. When there's like 12 people involved and one person is saying no, it's not good.
So let's talk about that, because I think one of the other interesting aspects of your job is not only is it a highly technical sale, but it's also, as you described, a very complex sale in the sense that you've got to go deep in the IT organization, but also wide across the firm. So what are some of the ways when you are working a deal, you sense that like win is in front of you, how are you teeing up how that VP of engineering should bring in others on the deal as well?
So I think it's best about one, prepping, making sure you and the VP of end are aligned on where you need to focus in order for it to be, again, crystal clear. So we're aligned on making sure we're not overcomplicating things. But two, the way that I'm doing this is I usually ask the question, say you're evaluating a couple of technology solutions and the technologies actually result in the same outcomes. What are the things that truly push one choice over the other? And these are things outside of how engineers usually think around cost savings or SLAs, these checkbox kind of metrics. Then it gets you outside of, oh, I think I like the one that people like to use better, or they felt like the team was way more fun to work with or way more helpful. Your roadmap looks better compared to the solution that we're also evaluating. I think that question usually gets the VP of engineering to think outside of that direct evaluation. And from there, that's when you go and engage the extended team where you're like, okay. And then from there, you're able to decide, now I need to talk with procurement. We got to talk with this team to plan with consumption. I need to talk with CTO because obviously, as you've seen with our roadmap, we can go in other areas. Let's already get started on what can be while we work on what will be.
I'm really curious about that because one of the pieces of advice you gave earlier was keeping a very tight scope and not allowing, even though you could hit a home run with this customer and transform four different departments, that actually might introduce too much complexity where you let perfect end up being the enemy of good. And I'm wondering, how do you explain that concept to a customer? Because I could see a competitor being like, hey, Shelby is only going to get you to first base. We're going to go swing for the fences right away. And they sell this really, really big vision. And then you get eliminated early in the process because you ask them to keep a tight scope. Could you talk about that?
I usually come back to when I say no to my prospects and I'm coaching them. What I found with, especially with technical engineers and the types of people that we sell with, you really need to prove yourself with doing. You have to do to really prove and get the buy-in. And so I think when you come back to, we need to get something actually done and we need to get something actually delivered. And the best way to do this is by one, pick the use case that we know will get a good result. Two, where the level of effort is the least. And three, then from the results, we can plan on where we need to invest from there. But we need to prove ourselves first before I let you, customer, invest any more time or anyone else's time further.
What are other areas in the sales process that you're pushing back and saying no to the customer? So I understand this one where you're putting some guardrails around massive scope expansion. One of the ones you mentioned earlier was if you feel like they might not be ready for this, you'll give them a soft pushback and say, hey, it feels like this might be a little bit early for you all. And I want to make sure I respect your time. And here's some of the reasons I feel like it might be early. And then they, when they say, no, this is why we need to do it now, it actually helps you understand to prioritize the deal. Are there other places where you are pushing back or saying no that you think folks should know about?
Yeah, I think for me, I always love to underpromise. Mm-hmm. So especially when you're dealing with technical people, it's like if you say, hey, it's going to be 11% faster and it's 10.5, just lost your credibility. And it matters. So I usually what I'll say is, you know what? This product, I don't think it ticks your boxes. This is what requirements you need. It's actually not ticking all of them. It's only ticking 90%. So I just don't think you should try it. And they're like, oh no, that's okay. And it once they correct the requirements for you and you are saying, okay, but just remember, I told you, you've set yourself up to sell from a place of, I'm so happy this like worked out for you. They're like stoked, but like you haven't oversold them as a salesperson selling to a technical audience. I think really making sure that you are under promising and over delivering builds a ton of trust and credibility.
And let's stay on this topic for a minute, because I imagine trust and credibility is such a precious part of the sales process for you. What are some of the other ways that you intentionally build trust and credibility across the course of your conversations with your prospects?
I think it's a lot about, I've been very lucky. I would say the product, Databricks as a product, has really never let me down. At this point in time, it's making sure that it's constantly just checking in with your customer. Like I would say requirements always are changing and people's comments and things that matter are always changing. And I think with my customer, I'm always very straight up and direct and honest. And I would say that's probably one of the biggest differences about selling in the US than the UK is just how direct and honest I am and straightforward. At the end of the day, we're all people. We all work these jobs. Everyone wants to make sure that what they're investing their time, energy, and effort into results in something. So if we're constantly working together and you make it one, a point of just like caring about their time and making sure that this is still worth it. Are you sure? So I would say I'm just really good at really checking in and just making sure. And I'm like, hey, it kind of seemed like that person got off the call and they weren't really thrilled, or sending a Slack and be like, hey, do you have like 5 minutes? That like kind of felt weird, or ooh, that call didn't go well. I'm really sorry. Do you have 5 minutes to understand like how we can make sure that doesn't happen again? I think just being very in tune and having the EQ to just like say what is out loud and acknowledge it, and you move from there. And I think that just really develops that great trust.
Are there other things that you've seen differences between selling in the US and selling in the UK that you think folks who might want to make the transition in Australia? I'm curious if there's any big cultural differences that you would recommend folks consider if they're ever planning on changing geos they sell into.
Yeah, I think it's actually really interesting. So I've sold to the Bay Area, which is the pinnacle of where technology is really being born. And so the way that those people buy is so different than the rest of the world. Having patience and owning up to just like who I am and how I work. I think I always like to explain to people that, hey, I'm going to be pretty direct. That's just how I am. And honestly, it's just about reading people on the first call. I think you can just really get a lot out of someone based off of just using EQ. So I would say that's honestly been one of my strong suits. Australia's, I'll give a couple of generalizations. One, I would say the UK is definitely more hesitant and standoffish. Australia, they're super happy to get on the phone and they actually love spending money on technology. They just take a really long time to buy technology. The Bay Area, you can do everything over email. It's pretty crazy. Like, I'm like, or over like a couple hangouts and they'll be literally 4 offices down. And you're like, wait, we never met in person. Me and being technical has really helped accelerate the trust to then know that the tech and who you're dealing with is good. So
I love it. This has been phenomenal. Shelby, we are running out of time. We got to move to our final question. And so the final question is this. We've talked about a lot of really great things salespeople should be doing. Now I got to ask you about a shouldn't. And so the last question is, what is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts them more than it helps?
Yeah, I'm all about making sure that you treat every conversation like you're building out your personal brand and your network of future customers to come. I think sometimes we can just look at qualification notes and be like, no, I don't need to talk to that person. Like that looks like a bad lead. But I think what's happened with me is that even if the customer isn't qualified now, they could be at a new company in 3 months, or they could be at the same company and be qualified 3 years from now. And I've had customers of mine respond to awesome emails that I sent 3 years ago and be like, hey, Shelby, I remember that conversation we had. That wasn't the time, but now I'm ready. And they bought. I've had it happen at DataWorks 3 times, which is crazy. It's like over 2 years for every single one. So I think make sure that you're not too hesitant to get on the phone, even if something doesn't look qualified, like say from an SDR. That could be your next customer, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now.
I love it. Shelby, thank you for joining us. Everybody, stick around for a 60-second recap coming up soon. Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes.
This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes. Today's tactic to triple your connect rate is brought to you by Rocket Reach, who provides data that lets you reach out to the right person at the right account at the right time. Every time you're reaching out to an account, pull down the contacts again. Yes, I know it sucks, but the average tech tenure is 2 years, which means 50% of the workforce turns over every year. So look up the account, pull anyone who was hired, and scratch anyone who is left. And one way you can pull verified and accurate data is with Rocket Reach. So if you like this, check out their toolkit on 8 ways to triple your cold call connects in the show notes. Your Zoom Info actionable insight tactic is called Jane's Moving Up. Why? Because that's the email subject line you'll use when you get a real-time notice that your prospect Jane just got promoted. From there, in the email, explain how Zoom Info helps rising sales leaders win their first 90 days on the job by highlighting coaching opportunities or supporting a team-wide prospecting push. And you can try out this trigger-based email template for prospect promotion and 4 other scenarios inspired by Zoom Info's go-to-market plays. Link in the show notes.
Your top 4 actionable takeaways from this episode with Shelby Furson. Number one, to learn about what's going on in your product org, in your engineering org, etc., get on the email alias distribution lists so that you are aware of what is happening in other parts of your organization. Number two, build out your go team of the people that you can rely on in legal, in product, in marketing, on the deal desk side, so that you're never stuck trying to figure out how you can get a function to help you with the deal. You always have somebody that you can go to.
Number three, when you're working with a champion, in order to determine next steps, ask the question, say you're evaluating a few technologies and they're similar. What are the things that make you pick one over the other? That will help dictate what's important to that particular buyer and what needs to happen in terms of next steps internally. And number four, when dealing with technical buyers, always underpromise. If you promise 11% increase in speed and you come in at 10.5%, you lose credibility. Allow them to make the exceptions for you. All right, Nick, how can listeners help us out today?
You can help us out by helping yourself out by going and actually building your go team. And Shelby said, hey, you might use the fact that it's the new year as an excuse to build out your internal network at a company. And if you don't feel comfortable using that excuse, you can use this episode as the excuse. You might say, hey, I was listening to my favorite sales podcast out there, 30 Minutes to President's Club, and it made me realize like I need to understand some of the different functions in our organization to help better serve our prospects and customers. Can I get 15 minutes with you just to understand how we might work together? Boom. Get that booked, build your go team, and we'll see you next week on 30 Minutes to President's Club.
Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Super Cadence by Influ2, which helps cut through the noise of oversaturated prospecting channels. If you want to get your prospect's attention, you got to do stuff a robot would never do. One of my favorite plays is getting warm introductions to the accounts that I'm targeting via salespeople who work at that account. Salespeople help salespeople. Another approach could be using Super Cadence to run SDR ads to put a face to the name. Now, we worked with Influ2 to put together a special toolkit on ways to humanize your outreach, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes. Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes.